Hello and welcome to the Delicious Recipe here on UPRN. It's Thursday and it's 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And if you guys are checking out there, we're on today. I just found this out. We're on International Public Radio, but we're also on all the rest of the Facebook and the Twitch and all the other stuff that goes along with it there. And we're doing this off of StreamYard, and that does come through in the comments. So from all the different sites there, I'll be able to see them. And if you notice me go down and looking like this, I'm reading your comments. So comment along there and come along and join the ride. It's Thursday and we have one of my favorite guests here anyways, Varla Ventura, and author extraordinaire of everything about the weird and the wonderful that people don't see. Say hello, Varla.
Hello. Thank you for having me back, Del.
Yes. So tell them. Here we go. Okay. Now I'm getting connected up here. Okay. Awesome. This is great. Okay. So what I did there is tonight there, because we have already done our four, solstices around the world and stuff like that, or around the year. And the big thing that came out this year was about the moon. And this year of 2021 was the moon. They were going to have some very special events. There was actually quite a few of them there. Three super moons, one blue moon, and two lunar eclipses that went through cycles there, which I guess would be really, really interesting there. And that's why I call this one there Moon Pies and Witchy Things, because this is a sort of an interesting sort of topic, I guess, in a way, is because if you look at the part about witchcraft or Wicca, or you look in even in religions and stuff like that, the moon and solar celestial bodies moving around the solar system, unless you're a flat earther, then you believe it's all just a matrix or something like that, and something just going on, you're playing a video game. But other people, these things are important, and we'll get into a lot more part of this, because I have a lot of questions for you there too about this and your thoughts about this. But the moon, what do you figure about the moon?
Well, the moon's so important in a not only just a spiritual way, but in an agricultural way. And so you see that time and time again with goddesses and gods who were worshipped and equated with the moon were also frequently equated with agriculture, or were agrarian gods, or had something to do with less so than the seasons, but something like fertility or abundance. Because I know we think of the sun as the sort of like main thing that plants need, but we also, the moon controls water. Full moons do actually cause plants to grow. There's a lot of plants that are associated specifically with the moon and can invoke medicinal and magical properties of the moon by being so. So I think the moon has this really key role, and of course the moon represents the divine feminine and the sun represents the divine masculine. You see that in Isis and Osiris. You see that, you know, across time in various cultures, there's usually some kind of representation of the moon and some kind of representation of the sun. And they're equally critical, and they sort of balance each other out. So it's also the dark and the light in our souls, in our daily lives, but like also very practically the dark and the light.
Yes, well, this is an interesting question. I've seen this come up a lot of times here, and this is, people that it maybe goes towards the more of the anti science, anti globe Earth, I guess, flat Earther people that the moon has heat, and this has been debunked many, many times, even on MythBusters or there and stuff like that, where the moon doesn't give off. It's a reflection of the sun that comes back down to the Earth.
Right.
But I just find it really, really interesting, because today I was looking at a whole bunch of things, and during the whole week, this actually the whole month. That's why I called it would this be such an interesting topic? Because you deal with the fairies, the pukas, and everything like that. And a lot of celebrations go around the moon. And actually, okay, a side note here is that I went to get really nice and pretty there for you to go out there. So I jumped in the shower, and I came out of the shower. And then all of a sudden, I looked at myself. I says, oh, my God. I says, maybe I should just let my beard grow, and I can be Tom Bombadil. And people don't know who Tom Bombadil is. That's from the Lord of the Rings. He's a character that was... He was a character that was taken out of the whole entire movies period, but it was a really great story that he had in there, that of a person there. And I was like, oh, geez, I almost, like I said, had a little pudgy little gut there and the long hair. And I said, I got yellow boots. I got a green jacket downstairs. I could be Tom Bombadil. But but the thing is, though, is that the moon is plays so much things there in all through religions and stuff like that, and cultures, native lore, just not saying North American native lore, but any native lore of regions, that people just look at it as a cycle. There was a part there that was in there about female cycles and the moon cycle, and then then wise women or the elders, healers and stuff like that. And then when religion sort of hijacked a lot of stuff there, you're sort of like, oh, geez, like, could there be something more to this?
Yeah, I mean, you have that interesting. So the sun, it will change paths in the sky. We know that there are monuments built to track that, right? And that the solstices were really important for that. The moon is constantly changing. And not only that, but if you think back at a time when we couldn't like Google when's the next eclipse, or get like, you know, the little notification, hey, there's a lunar eclipse tonight.
Right.
You imagine those times when there were, I mean, that's, I know it was a solar eclipse, but that was kind of the premise of the Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, right? Where he goes back in time and tells them, hey, there's this eclipse happening, and everybody's freaking out and thinks the world's going to end, and like all everything's plunged into darkness, and the lords of the underworld are taking over. And it's like, yeah, you know what? Give it like an hour and a half and everything will be fine.
Yeah.
So, but we also have many cultures that still today use a lunar calendar and follow that lunar, you know, the, what we use in North America is the solar calendar. But for example, the traditional Chinese calendar is a lunar calendar. The new year is the lunar new year. And so the cycles are a little bit different.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, there's definitely connections between the divine feminine, the cycles of the moon, and that tying in not only with, you know, things like menstruation and but also fertility and the optimal times to, you know, have to increase the odds that you're actually going to be able to make a baby, if you're talking about like a man woman procreation situation, right? Mm-hmm. So those things were vital to the survival of any kind of society, to be able to kind of track that. And that you know, is, I think, still for many people viewed as a very sacred cycle. It's just, you know, probably not until the Victorian era where we became particularly embarrassed by anything that, you know, looks even remotely like blood on our white linens. So
that's the big thing there. But that actually, blood on a white linen was actually a part of purity in the part of the Mennonite and stuff there, that's how you knew that your bride was pure. Right.
Right. Double standard, because the men didn't have to be pure. Right. They didn't. Right. That wasn't the standard. But yeah.
No, it's just crazy things like that. It's just unbelievable. But this whole thing about cycles and stuff like that. And like with this year, like I said there, that this year was supposed to be a special year with what ended up happening there with these cycles that went out, and it happens every so often. And the part that I think sort of is really interesting that gets in there is that people look at cycles when alignments happen. And with this year, like with having like these, what was it? Three super moons, one blue moon, and two lunar eclipses. And I just want to go and tell people there, a blue moon, there's two different types of blue moons. And There's the blue moon is the second one in a monthly cycle, but a seasonal four moons in a season is a much rarer one. And we had one of those happen this year.
Ah, I actually didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I learned something. I post things on Facebook every day. I learn something new every day, and I post these things up there, and I go through all this stuff there because I'm interested about life, and I'm interested about stuff there and what people think, and I'm interested a lot further out of my bubble, and I want to learn things. That's what the whole part about the delicious recipe is. You throw lots of things in the pot, learn information, whether or not you take it or not, who knows, whether it tastes good to you. Don't care.
Yeah, you might need a little more salt, you know.
And that's the biggest thing. And it's like, okay, so through your stuff and your studies and stuff like that, you have parts there that deal with the fairies, pukas, and stuff like that. What sort of things there that they did ceremonies that dealt with moon stuff?
So one of the key things is that not going out, you know, past midnight on All Hallows Eve, or really past midnight on most nights, as a cautionary tale to avoid, you know, being kidnapped by the puka or harassed by the fairies. Mm-hmm. The full moon was also a time when you had to be cautious. Perhaps people were more tempted to go out because it was brighter. You also had we know this today, like people are more alert and awake and it's brighter. So if you're used to sleeping in darkness and there's this like extreme light coming in, mm-hmm. so you might be more alert and the animals are more alert. And so therefore you can assume that the fairies are more afoot. And so there are many cautionary tales specifically talking about not going out on a full moon, avoiding the fairy mounds or any of the places that are known to be inhabited or, you know, entryways into the hollow hills of the fairy kingdom. Now, witches like that kind of stuff. So we like to go out in the middle of the night. We like to go out and seek those things. And that it wasn't really until, you know, sort of the introduction of Christianity overlapping paganism and like original beliefs in like Celtic culture, for example, that witches were viewed. It's not that they weren't feared or revered, but that idea of communing with the fairies was considered something that you did occasionally for specific purposes, and that witches were actually the ones that could kind of be the bridges between the other world and this world.
Right.
And that's a super important part of anyone's journey, psychologically, culturally, spiritually, just being able to kind of cross over into some kind of plane of darkness. Right. And then come back from that. It's a facing your fears. It's a rite of passage. So I think that there's a lot of elements of that around the full moon. Mm-hmm. But then like modern witches have full moon ceremonies all the time. I mean, basically, if you ask a good solid witch, they will tell you, if you want something, if you want your spell to work, do it on the full moon.
Okay.
Don't even bother. I mean...
Okay, now this is a question there, because this is where my skeptical brain goes into stuff there, okay? Because I look at about the spinning of the earth and stuff there, and then I look at about spatially, cosmically, right? So if you get away from the earth and you're outside of the earth and say you're on the moon, does your spell work there more potently because you're on the moon? Or like out there in a spaceship?
But you would have a full earth. You wouldn't have a full moon.
But the thing is... No, but the thing is, though, like I look at about this, I always put this question there, said if you have 24 people all around the earth in different time zones and they all magically go to the center of the earth, what time is it?
Central Earth time.
Yeah, but everybody has their different time, right?
But it's in the middle.
Yeah, no, but everybody's leaving. I'm leaving at 1 o'clock. You're leaving at 2 o'clock. So what time is on your watch?
Doesn't matter. Your watch breaks when you get to the center of the earth, Dal.
Right. Oh, okay. Well, if you're gonna go that,
but I mean, really, that is.
That's why it was. This is the question I was had about this. It says, so why does it have to be with the crest of the moon, like times between 12 and 3, witching hour, at that, when you're on, it only works on Earth. It can't work on Jupiter. It can't work on Saturn. That it has to be there, which should work any time period, right?
Well, okay, so a couple of things. First of all, if you do go into the Earth or you plunge yourself into the fairy kingdom, whether that's like metaphorically in your mind or actually you're like, you find some kind of portal.
Right.
Time is different there. It is not the same. And that is something that we take away from the fairies. We take away from kind of that supernatural realm, but we also can't quantify. And it's really difficult for us as humans that look at our watches and use our daily calendars.
I like this.
To get over that, right? That time is less linear. If you think about some of the like most epic myths, of like these kind of incredible things that happen, they frequently happen. It's something that today would be like a 30, 40 day journey, and they end up having happened in like 48 hours.
Right.
Because when you cross over, you're crossing over into this other realm. And the only thing I can give a really solid example of that most people would probably be able to relate to, if you've ever been, on death watch, where someone you know is dying,
right?
And you're at their bedside, or if you've ever been present at a birth, time, you know, if it's it, it time doesn't matter until the moment happens, and right. Time changes. It's a different view. It's a different sense of time. Time actually changes around you, and so I think that that's something really important to think about when you're talking about like it's not the current modern time zones that we're talking about. We're talking about I wouldn't tell you to leave at 1. I'd tell you to leave at like half light.
Yeah.
And I'd leave at my half light and we'd meet at the same time. Ooh. Right. So there's that aspect.
That is so great. It says that is a totally different spin on stuff there. Actually, I've heard that before, but I never really considered it and thought about it until you explained that. That makes a lot more sense about dealing with mystical, magical, dimensional beings. That sort of really is, that's an interesting take on that.
Well, and with time, so the other aspect of that is that, for example, full moon, just getting back to like full moon magic, and the cycles of the moon and how that relates to something, let's say spell work, for example. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons that you do spells at the full moon, or the spells that you do at the full moon, are the things that you really, really want the most, things that you want to explode, things that you want to like come into fruition.
Right.
Things that you want to be rid of, you do in the dark of the moon, you do in the new moon. But you also can do a very powerful riddance or banishing under the full moon. Right. But if you're thinking about like very few of us are like, okay, full moon, I can go and do all the things that I want to do this night and light a bonfire and get all my candles ready. It's like, you know, practically speaking, you know, some of us work nights, we got kids, whatever. So one of the things that I think like, especially in modern witchcraft, people have adapted to are things that you do with the cycles of the moon. For example, when the moon is waxing, that is, it's getting closer to its fuller stage. Those are the things that you symbolically want to have more of. You want to increase more of abundance spells. As you're going into waning spells, when the moon is actually getting skinnier and smaller, that's when you would do spells of things that you want to have less of. For example, if you're trying to rid yourself of a habit or certain behaviors or certain neighbors, you can practice those gently during the waning moon. If you want it to be fully effective, of course, just go full moon. But again, if you can't get to the full moon. So that, having said that, if you are, it doesn't matter if you're in Hawaii or Newfoundland, the light of the moon is going to cast at the right time.
Okay.
Now, if you're talking about off-planet stuff, that's a whole, I mean, like, that it's not, we don't have the same access or relationship with the moon. You'd be talking about Jupiter's moons or whatever. So that's I don't know. I mean, I've never done outer space magic. You know, I've probably been in the astral plane a few times without realizing it, but I definitely don't know what it would be like to, I mean, they should send a witch to the moon. That would be amazing.
There you go. They did it in the Marvel comics anyways.
Right, right. It's natural choice.
I was watching this. Actually, I followed her quite a while. There's, I think her name's the Green Witch, and she was talking about waxing moons and waxing moons, you planted seedlings. Mm-hmm. Waning moons, you planted seeds. And that was dealing more with, I guess she's a green Wiccan witch. So for the people.
Oh, yeah. So plants totally come into play.
So a difference here, the note I had before there, can you tell the viewers out there, what's the difference about being a Wiccan or witchcraft?
Okay, so there are a lot of people that identify as witches, and then there are people who identify as Wiccans, and Wiccans identify as witches, but not all witches identify as Wiccans. So okay. Wiccan is kind of a neo-pagan, so a new pagan movement that, you know, people like Scott Cunningham were very instrumental in introducing kind of to the modern lexicon, especially in the 60s and 70s. People who are followers of some of the founders of modern witchcraft, such as Gerald Gardner, they may consider themselves Wiccans, but if they're initiates into a Gardnerian tradition or an Alexandrian tradition, for example, which is a whole series of things that you must do to be an initiate, then you would not consider yourself a Wiccan. I do not consider myself a Wiccan. I am not an initiate either, but I don't consider myself a Wiccan. I think that there's a lot of things that I overlap with that. But for me, Wiccan is a little too, takes a little too much from all of the things. And I've never really quite identified with any one specific thing, but that's, you know, they all tend to work with the moon, cycles, the earth, plants, magic. So I would say that it's a little less, it's a little more out of fashion, in the witchcraft community to identify solely as a Wiccan. Okay. But then again, there are a lot of people who come to it because maybe they have some inherited ability or they're interested in exploring it. And Wiccan and some of the, and especially if you're talking about in terms of like books and the materials that are available out there, Wiccan is like the very accessible version of that.
Right. So that's sort of like the commercialized version of people to go and buy stuff then. Wiccan.
Kind of. Well, it's actually, it comes from an Irish word or a Gaelic word, which is actually pronounced like Witta, which I'm probably not even pronouncing that right. And so the Wicca part of it is actually is a very modern term. And I don't say that as a criticism, it just is. So it has its roots in some very old practices, but it has borrowed from so many different, you know, it's a very pan religion type thing, you know, it's just like kind of encompasses a lot of things. So
like pansexual. So that's why guys could be witches.
Oh, it's no. When I mean a pan religion, it means it a pan being like many things. So it can encompass many different rituals. But yes, I would say that the witchcraft community in general has always been very open about gender and sexuality and allowing people to kind of be who they want to be. And a lot of people do come to it from that place. They are, you know, they find a lot of community and community support and can also discover different parts of themselves as they're in tune with their feminine or their masculine side.
Right.
But so like all of these,
like a religion in a way, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And they all do actually talk a lot about accessing the divine feminine and the divine masculine. Right. So that's kind of interesting because you don't have that with some other religions. So especially people who have been raised in a strict religious environment, or, you know, meaning like a Christian religious environment,
yeah,
or they maybe have been very gendered from a young age and they're not comfortable with that, can find a lot of peace and joy in witchcraft.
Okay, so what would be a warlock then? That's non-feminine.
A warlock is a warlock is also a witch. Generally, a male. Generally, men witches will identify as warlocks and witches.
Can a female be a warlock?
I don't know. I don't know too many women who identify as warlocks. They probably could be if they really wanted to be. But male warlocks also tend to kind of be particularly. How should I say, like leaders in their community. So they're kind of like very influential. Right. That's in my experience. That's what I've seen. And it's a term that, you know, people embrace. So if you're embracing that term, you know, honestly, I'll call you almost anything you want.
Right. Well, that's, I guess the whole part there, that's because these are terms that have been used for hundreds and hundreds of years. I guess they're warlock was male, witch was female, and then now we've sort of blended the thing there through. Now we have Wiccan witches, wise one, healers, and
witches were
and sort of popped into all the same category, right?
Sure. And witch became particularly equated with women again during the onset of Christianity,
right?
And the belief that the devil had anything to do with witchcraft. As soon as the devil entered into play, women were blamed.
Right.
I mean, well, that's just straight up the truth.
That was the whole story when Eve ate the fruit and then
yeah, sure, it's all her fault.
Adam,
it's all her fault. That's when women more and more were accused of witchcraft in a negative way.
Yeah.
And were tried for that frequently because they had something that whoever was in power wanted, whether right. that was influence, land, abilities, that, you know, yeah. whatever thing they could get.
Mm-hmm. Yes. No, I just find this, like, so going back into the lunar thing. So we have these moons. We had, like, this year was a special year, and they give them really weird names there too. We have like a blue moon. Why, like a blue moon? Like, there was one thing there, and I'll give a little hint here because I went and found this out there. So I'm just going to go and toot my own horn for this. So in 1883, Indonesia, Mount Krakatoa erupted, sending particles into the atmosphere that refracted red light waves that made the moon appear blue or green for 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I have to wonder, because history is being so distorted and being erased and stuff like that, where there's stuff that's out there that you wonder about, like, where do these terms come up from? Like blue moon, like even with here, we have like strawberry moon, a wolf moon.
Yeah, this is actually, I wrote down what our moon is because it's like tomorrow, I think, is our moon. Harvest moon is what I have. I'm not sure what you, I was like kind of looking at them all. Harvest moon, the October moon was called the hunting moon. Now, of course, there are different names for it in different places, and different indigenous cultures have their own name for it, but it usually tied into something that was happening a lot at that time. And this is totally harvest. I don't know about you, but I have a pretty decent garden, and I went from like 0 to 60, and now I have like so many tomatoes that I can't eat another tomato. So
I have lots of cucumbers. I need tomatoes.
Darn it. If only the border was open.
We were so close.
I know. So close. So close. Next summer we'll do a garden swap.
Exactly. You know, I had
Canadian cucumbers for American tomatoes will be like.
I made pickles there last week, so.
I know, you get creative trying to come up with all the different things, but then that also makes sense if you think about the October moon the October full moon being the hunter's moon, because of course now you are like, right now we're like, woo, it's the harvest, it's abundance, we're going into fall. I don't know about where you are, but you can definitely feel the change of the seasons here where I am. And you know, summer is over, fall has begun, and then you know, winter, with fall comes winter. And winter, especially when you live in a harsh environment, mm-hmm. winter can be a very scary thing. And you imagine a time when, you know, you didn't have a heater and a house with a steel, you know, the storm door and all those things. Mm-hmm. And so you think about, okay, this is the time to stock up, right? And this is when all the animals are stocking up, they're hunting and they're eating and they're, you know, getting ready for winter too.
So. I looked into this, and actually the reason this even came up, and this actually just when you were saying things, they're just all of a sudden popped in my mind. I was working up in Flin Flon, Manitoba, which is way north than Thunder Bay, like way over. And the native calendar has six seasons, and whereas the rest of the people have four, right?
Oh, they interesting.
Have, yeah, they have a breakup. Okay, it was summer, spring, summer, fall, freeze up, winter, break up, and then back into spring again. So they work in a six season year, 12 month year, like that.
When I moved to Minnesota, my friend sent me a Minnesotan calendar, and it included false spring.
Yeah.
Because it would be really nice for like 3 weeks and then it would snow.
Yeah.
Well, right on top of whatever little things were sprouting out. And she was like, haha, it's false winter. Winter is back. Second winter, third winter.
Well, we have a thing up here called Indian summer, which ends up happening after once the fall goes, then also we hit up to temperatures are 20 degrees higher than what they should usually be. And they're just warm. And it's like you're back out to wearing shorts again for about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it says, I always tell this, it's like, we haven't even hit Indian summer yet. Like we're still going. And that's just a weird thing that, I'm up in Thunder Bay, Northern Ontario. I'm about another like 8 plus 10 hours north of you where you are. So, on Lake Superior, middle of the country, there are people there. Lake Superior is not Toronto and it's not Newfoundland or Vancouver, because I get these questions all the time. Like, oh, aren't you, don't you know Bob there at Redfields in Newfoundland? This is
pretty Canada's... Newfoundland's pretty far away. I'd love to go there sometime. I think it would be a great place to check out, but it's like Maine. It's basically the same, the same part of the country over there. So
it's just different. And out of this whole thing, there is like, so you have the moon and the Farmer's Almanac. Okay. So now where did the Farmer's Almanac take that stuff from there? Did they take that from the wise woman and the witches?
I think the Farmer's Almanac really kind of started in the 1800s. And I think that it came from a combination of, you know, whoever the settlers and the colonizers were, whatever their wisdom that they gleaned from their home countries, and then observing the seasons, and then, you know, stealing from the indigenous peoples. Yeah. But I think that that's where a lot of the Farmer's Almanac, quote unquote, wisdom comes from. But it does also come from working the land, observing the seasons. And of course, it's different depending on where you are. Yeah. But I wanted to say something that's kind of interesting, kind of the opposite of what you're talking about with the six seasons.
Yeah.
And I've actually been working with someone on this really amazing book that he's working on. And we've been talking a bit about the sort of Persephone, the Persephone myth. And also there's another myth we've been working with. And the Persephone myth, if you're not familiar with it, Persephone is the Demeter's daughter. Yeah. And Demeter is the goddess of like fertility and the harvest and crops. And so she was revered in ancient Greece because she was like the one that ensured that everybody would eat. Mm-hmm. So somehow lost to time, but basically Zeus promises their daughter, Persephone, yeah. to Hades, the lord of the underworld.
Yeah.
And sends her down there, or actually Hades kidnaps her and drags her down there. And, you know, he's like, whatever. So he's lord of the underworld. She's stuck down there. And Demeter freaks out, yeah. freaks out that it was done without her consent, wants to see her daughter, and wreaks havoc. And she basically like casts a pox on the land of like cold and darkness. And she's just like, yeah. nope, nothing will grow. You will be in a wasteland until my daughter comes back. And so eventually, and no one can, no, all the gods of Olympus try, no one can control her anger. And so finally Zeus says, well, fine, she can come back. But when she's down there at this point, she's had her union with Hades, and she actually quite willingly eats pomegranate seed, which is the food of the which is the food of the dead, and because of that she is bound to him. And so 6 months out of the year she spends with him, and 6 months out of the year she spends with her mother. And yeah. in Greece there's really just two seasons, winter yeah. and summer, because it's a totally different climate. So yeah. I think it's very interesting to see that sort of mythology, how it evolves regionally as well, based on the actual seasons, as well as the lunar cycles, and that magic is relevant to that. Right. For example, you're not going to worship a Norse god of the cold moon
the winter, yep.
when you're like hanging down in the Mediterranean Sea.
Yeah. So. Well, that's interesting. I really love that part there, because you know what, that's sort of interesting, and this goes into another area that I've been sort of looking into too. And the thing is, it was that the powers that be that write the book that are in power, and the only way that they can give the story to simple people, right, the uneducated, which is basically 99% of the people that are not in power, right. is they make stories. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you have to wonder, is that the stories that they created these characters to give them their, so that it's like basically making cartoons for kids.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a part that I've been looking into, and I'm going more and more deeper into this through the part there, is that do you think that part of the our history that there is about gods and angels and demons and stuff like that is all cartoons for kids?
It's to control the masses, right? To keep yeah. everybody working in the fields, everybody. And then the reward is the ceremony, or the requirement is the ceremony in yeah. which you make your offerings, your sacrifice, in order to maintain that balance. Yeah. And that's absolutely true also of many myths, in which we use them as cautionary tales.
Well, you do it in religion there as well. Like, hey, we drink the blood of Christ. Right. So we're a vampire.
And nothing morbid about that.
And then eating the blood, eating the
flesh,
drinking the blood. So like, where does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like that's morbid in a way. That's where the whole vampire stuff there is sort of going.
Yeah, it really, I know there's some pretty intense elements of some of those devout Catholic rituals that are actually quite morbid and quite heavy, and with superstition and religion, even right. more so than like your average modern day witch.
Right. And then you get into the stories of the fun stuff that is there. Like, people are going out there and lighting candles, having bonfires for Samhain to keep witches in. Maybe it's to keep the rest of the religious people away. Like,
yeah. That's too. You've got people who are, you know, basically blowing off steam, ending the harvest, and also trying to keep a balance. This is like, you know, this is critical. It's critical today, but a lot of people have lost touch with that. But maintaining a balance and maintaining a healthy reverence for yeah. the unseen is always in your best interest. And so like, even with the Persephone myth, you have a very similar thing in Celtic mythology and in modern fairy lore of eating something from the other side and not being able to fully return. Like part of you stays there. You're told first of all, don't fall asleep on the fairy mound. But then if you do, and you end up in that place, eating and drinking will basically lock you to them, and you sort of become a servant to the fairies.
Ooh, this is an interesting part, because magic mushrooms are supposed to bring you across the veil. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this before, about the Santa Claus myth with the mushrooms that were out there.
Yeah, I do.
The deer's eating the pea, and they're eating the mushrooms, and then they were drinking the pea, and they would go off and they would break out through the veil, and they would understand that, hey, maybe that this whole system of governance that's here is not actually fair for everybody. And maybe that might be a thing there. That's why the people and the powers that are bees, that they keep on making these stories up and says, hey, promote this. This is all bad, bad mess. Everything goes wrong. The Alice in Wonderland thing there.
Like, well, you can use stories really for anything. And if we think about it too, so many stories were told in the oral tradition, and it was really only until more recently that things were written down. Right. As far as things were written down in the kind of the modern lexicon. Right. A lot of the people who were writing the stories down were educated, learned people who frequently were like men of the cloth. I mean, that's who had the ability to travel around and gather all the fairy stories from the peasants in Ireland. That's right. What William Butler Yeats actually did. I mean, his first like big collection was actually called Stories of the, Peasantry. And it was a way to collect folklore and be so those folklorists were then putting their own kind of spin on things. And you see that time and time again. But I do think that the art of story and the telling of story, not only is it powerful because it allows people to kind of, it does allow a certain amount of mind control, right? It does allow a certain amount of influence, but right. It also allows you to kind of imagine that these things are important. So if you think about it like, okay, well, you're just telling the story to keep me from like falling in the bog and having this bog creature grab me, but also I believe in that bog creature, which means that I believe in things that I can't see, which means I'm accepting that there are things out there that I don't understand and that I can't see. But it also allows me to think about, it kind of allows people to think outside the box. So if you think outside the box, then you're going to invent something. Then you're going to say, well, I don't know if this is going to work, but I'm going to try it because, I also think that the myths serve that purpose, that they're examples to us. So if somebody has to like go and endure, right? It's like, oh my gosh, she spent 6 months in the realm of Hades, which was just like the completely like most icy, cold, miserable place. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm kind of cold on a winter's day while I'm out there like toiling. I can think, well, Persephone did it. I can suck it up and do it. She did it for 6 months, right?
No, that's exactly right. And did you notice there through your stuff there? I have one other thing I want to go and ask you there here about this, a quote. But the thing is, though, is that have you noticed through your research there is that how the myths go temporally down through the equator, then down, how they sort of work? Do they sort of work climately, like just what you said there about the 6 months and the 6 months? And
yeah, I would say climate has a huge impact on mythology, as does probably more than that is climate affects the natural world. The natural world is the number one factor in any mythos. So you're going to have a lot of mermaids in Ireland. Any island nation has a lot of mermaids. You're going to have different kinds of creatures or maybe similar creatures or supernatural beings, but their environment is different. And so their behavior is different. Okay, so you might have a werecow or whatever instead of a werewolf.
Why would you have more mermaids in Ireland, which is cold, and not have them in?
Because it's an island. It's an island, because Ireland's an island. So yeah, island nations.
Caribbean's a whole bunch of islands.
No, that's what I said. You have in Ireland, you have a high percentage of mermaids,
okay.
And as well as in any island nation. Okay. So if you go and look at like different island, back history of any island nation, you will find mermaid mythos in there, as well as coastal regions, but in particular island nations, because they're completely surrounded. And that's why, I mean, Ireland is an island, so that's why mermaids are there. There's tons of mermaid stories in Ireland. It's considered to be, the Merrow are one of the fairy creatures there.
Right. Yeah. That's sort of.
And I heard a cool thing. I don't know if this is like, I mean, this is kind of like a little bit off topic, but I heard this really cool theory not long ago that was, because people always say to me, like, well, why can't you see fairies, or like, how come no one's ever seen a mermaid? And one of the responses that I usually kind of have come to is that it was actually believed mermaids, because they were magical creatures, they were actually equated and hunted as witches were during the witch trials. But even more so, there's a story about the main like mermaid god. His name is Manon Mac Lir, and he is the son of the sea god. And he, what he does is he actually casts a foggy cloak, and it's a cloak of invisibility. And so if you think about, like, I lived in San Francisco most of my life, there's a very thick fog. The Isle of Man, for whom, you know, which is named after Manon Mac Lir, is covered in this very thick fog. And it's actually said that he gave that cloak of invisibility and that ability, he gave that to the fairy folk. And so that's why we don't see them, unless, you know, they choose to make themselves known to us, because they have this cloak of invisibility that allows them to not be constantly hunted and murdered.
And this comes into a good part about this. Okay, this comes here. The Indian mystic guru, Sadhguru, he said, if you live to be 84 years, 3 months, you'll have completed 7 solar cycles and 108 lunar cycles, which gets you a break from the earth that allows you to break away from the earth that you can see everything. So if you live to be 84 years and 3 months, the world, you break that cycle where everything is, now you can see everything.
And did you say that was 108? What was the 108? Because I know that that's a significant number.
It's 84 years, 3 months. It's 7 solar cycles, complete solar cycles, which, and then that's 1,008 lunar cycles.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, and there's a really cool thing.
Hashtag goals.
It allows you to break away from that, and then you actually get to see what's going on. Don't be led by your government that goes and tells you other things.
Oh, yeah. Just try and make it to 84, and you'll be 84 in 3 months.
3 3 months. That's
Yeah. Okay.
We only have 2 minutes left there, and tell them about everything that's coming up there. Because I love to have you on here all the time there. Tell us what you got going on.
And yep. Just so working on a couple books. Yeah. Just kind of working away. I've been doing a lot of writing, working on a couple books. One of them's about like plant magic and plant, you know, kind of plant myths, actually plants as they relate to myths, and adding some things to my store, and actually cooking up a little bit of a podcast series too about like strange world. Yeah. So it involves a lot of writing. It's a lot more labor intensive than I thought it would be. I have to write each episode. So it's like writing a whole story. Right. So I'm like super behind on that, but yeah, you can find me at varlaventura.net. I've got a shop there. Anyone who's watching, this is the Varla Ventura logo mug. You can get
those. I'm going to buy one there. Yeah, next there.
You can get hats and t-shirts, and I'll probably add a couple of things before Halloween, some new swag in there. So yeah.
Awesome. I'm so happy that you came on the show again there.
I am honored.
I always love having you on here, because we always have such good times there.
I know. And I just want to say, like, I mean, I didn't prepare a lot, because you know, I looked up to make sure I knew what the name of the moon was this month, but I knew you were going to just ask questions that we could just have discussions. And so I love that. I truly enjoy it.
Well, that's the whole thing. We just throw everything in the pot and we just go from there, and we just see how it tastes.
Stoke the fire.
There we go. And I know what, and one time there, when we're able to cross the border again, I would love to have you come.
We're going to have a bonfire in real life
there. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Say hi to Lore.
I will. Well, she's out there. She's all moping because she didn't get the one camera there.
Tell her I'm available. I can make myself available for her whenever she'd like. We should do an October show.
Awesome. Okay. Here we go. The delicious recipe. And we have to go off there. Michael Angley is coming up next here on UPRN. And thank you very much, Varla.
Thank you. Thanks, Del.
And we wait for the suspicious music to come on there.
Okay. Try not to say anything illegal.
So how far did you go up you say you were camping up there up by Grand Portage?
No, but I've gone
Grand Marais?
Grand Marais is the furthest north I've gone in Minnesota.
Okay.
And then that's what, like 3 hours from you once you hit that border?
Depending on who's driving, you can do it in about 2 1/4, yeah.
But it's due north. You guys are just like straight north.
Like a
first start of the north, straight on till morning.
we're about 35 miles from the border, right? Thunder Bay to down to Pigeon River crossing, eh?
Okay.
And then You have right there, you have Grand Portage, and then you have the casino, and then you have Grand Marais or Hovland. There's a whole bunch of them. I can't even remember them all now.
Yeah.
Lutzen Slides.
Yeah. Well, remember, I don't know if it was the last time I talked to you guys, but one of the times this summer when we connected, I was actually in Two Harbors.
Okay.
We just had gotten like a Airbnb there, and it was like totally this cute Airbnb, and it was right on Lake Superior. It's great.
Yeah. So. Now, Two Harbors, I played hockey there when I was younger. I played hockey in a lot of places all through the States and stuff like that. But we used to do the whole
trip. What did you play?
Hockey.
I know, but like, what was your position? My son's a goalie, I got to ask.
I have played right wing and center.
Right wing and center. Okay, because he'll ask me. Yeah.
I did that all the way down. I used to go to tournaments down in Duluth, but we used to stay in Superior at the Bridgeview. Right as soon as you go over the bridge. And
totally. That's actually, he's 10, so we're just kind of getting to the age of like where there's a few more like trips involved with hockey. So, but he wanted to be a goaltender, and he started a couple years ago, and that's just what he wants to do. He's into it, and it's funny and adorable. Quite frankly,
we made my younger brother the goaltender because we need to take shots at him. So,
somebody's got to do it.
But the Bridgeview, right, about 25 feet across from the Bridgeview is the Hammond, and that's where you can get beer and all the booze and stuff like that. But on Sunday nights, you have this great prime rib dinner there for like $13, and it's just huge. Pudding, everything like that. $13.
Is that in that part of Duluth that's down by the lift bridge?
No, it's in Superior. As soon as
it's in Superior on the other side of the bridge. Yeah.
There's the bridge view, and then right next to it is the Hammond, and the Hammond.
Okay. We have looked at property up there because it's pretty cheap, and you know, just put like a tiny house off grid and be as close to the lake as possible and get away from it all. Writer's studio.
Yeah. Well, that whole strip that goes along Superior. Superior is poorer than Duluth is.
Oh, yeah. You can tell. You can tell when you go up to the fridge.
But that whole strip that goes down there, they're trying to build it up, but it doesn't seem to be working. Like, I've been going down there for...
I have seen like some apartment buildings. Yeah. Kind of a cool area, though. I love the combination of the lake and that sort of like factory industrial thing that Duluth has going on. It's just it's very with the boat, the ore boats and everything. It's very gritty. It's a gritty town.
Well, if you go over to the Bridgeview in Superior, and then you go, I guess it's a little bit north, about 2 blocks, then you hit I think it's Pacific Avenue. And there are 74 bars that were along there. That's where we used to.
That's where we used to go Wisconsin.
Because there was a drinking age difference, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And also, like, could you, because I know here, when I moved here, actually, it's not like that anymore, but you couldn't, like, you could go to bars on Sundays, but you couldn't buy alcohol on Sundays in stores. You can now.
Yep.
And I grew up in California. I was like, what fresh hell is this? What is happening? I do not understand. Why, what is significant about Sunday? I don't get it.
Well, the thing is weird though, is that America and different states, they have happy hours and they have closed down hours. And the thing is though, is that Canada, there's no happy hours. Like you can go to the states, except for Manitoba, during the when school goes in, they have happy hour. But otherwise, in the states, you go, okay, from 5 to 6, it's 25 cent beers.
Yeah, it's like,
And
yeah, you
then
get
you
like
can buy as
deals.
many as you want and just take 10 of them and go like this and just and go, yeah. And then it didn't matter quantity. And then all of a sudden it says, okay, well, that's done from 5 to 6. And you go to the next bar, it's, well, it's 6 to 7, 10 more. It just kept on going. Shooters, oh, yeah, 40. Yeah,
Take all
25
those.
cents. It was just nuts
Start
back in the 90s.
pouring them in your own bottle so you can take it back to the hotel.
I actually had a guy that a friend of mine there, he worked in Canada and went across the International Falls, and he used to go and empty out his 2 liter. He'd take like a little and empty it out there, and he'd go and buy 40 pounders in the States, because it gets them for like $7, right? But it cost us $90 back in Canada. So he just that, and he financed his whole wedding for his daughter by just bringing back 2 liters of stolen
Smuggling,
booze.
basically. I respect that.
He did that for 2 years. He just filled up. He had a whole, I saw the basement. It's like all these 2 liters of booze. I'm like, oh, what, how'd you do that? He says, oh, yeah, just
One
every
at a
day I went
time.
across,
One at
fill it
a
up. Yeah, unbelievable.
That's
So
great.
how did you enjoy your trip there up along the lake there?
Oh, I love it up there. It's so beautiful.
Yeah,
Yeah, it's just beautiful. Yeah.
Lake Superior is pretty cold though.
It is very cold. Yes. Yes. But I, in California, like that Northern California coast, the ocean's really cold. So it's not, I mean, Superior is a bit colder, but it's not that much colder than that Northern Pacific Ocean. It's not like an ocean that you can really, I mean, you can swim in it, but you typically wear a wetsuit
Right.
to do so. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's the whole thing, salt water, the fresh water. And this is one thing I don't understand. Okay, clue me in on this. Why do Americans not understand how big the Great Lakes are and how much they vast across the country?
Because Americans basically, like, because California and New York are like the biggest influencers in
Well, but
America,
Chicago?
and they basically don't include anything in between except Chicago. And that's it's a shame because there are all these states they call the flyover states, and they're amazing. There's,
Yeah.
they're rich with just all kinds of things.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't
What?
know, because we're jerks. That's why.
I actually, you know what?
We are.
I'm gonna send you something. There's a post of a series I've been watching this. I can't remember what it's because I have to do it off of this phone. I'll send you it afterwards. It's named something like George Santorini there. He's been traveling around, going into Mennonite, going into every different place there over the last 2 years, and just going, this is what the media's not telling you, but it's just like everybody thinks like people are different than from them, and he just shows the different cultural things, and
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
he's like he's going and says, well, this is what everybody's been telling me about you people, and I'm coming here, and he goes, this is not what's going on. Or this
Yeah.
is not everybody thinks that Mennonites, they have to go and put a pillow down with a little hole in the blanket. And
Oh, yeah. I mean, maybe
so
like
it
once upon a
goes
time.
going,
Yeah.
yeah, that's not what's going on. I'm going, well, yeah, it's a really, really great set of series there. I'll send you to
Yeah,
that.
send me the
Because
name of it. interesting.
I've been so I don't even know if I can even do it off of this phone, because this is how great the internet is here. But I've been watching this series. I watched about 40 episodes. I'm going, oh my God. I've been posting them on my Facebook page there too. I'm going, I never knew. I says, found out something new every day.
Interesting because it does kind of help you like understand your own, like you consider yourself an open-minded person. And yet there are all these cultural biases that you have that you don't even like, they're like ingrained, right?
Yeah. Like, I didn't know there was a difference between Mennonite and Amish. And then
I didn't know that only because the Mennonites take the trains here a lot.
Well, but there's levels of Mennonite and there's levels of Amish.
Right.
I never even knew that.
So, like, one thing my main experience with Mennonites is, like, having been on the train alone with my son. And, like, one of us has to go to the bathroom or go, like, get a snack. Typically he wants the snack and I have to go to the bathroom and it's like, okay, what do I do? And if I'm in a car with Mennonites, I'm like, he'll be fine here by himself.
Yeah.
Well, like it's usually families traveling together and.
Yeah. Well, it's no, they're very close knit, great community. I don't know. It's just weird. But then they have their sections of where they don't like each other. It's unbelievable.
You know, one of the most interesting, I did not actually, spoiler alert, I did not actually graduate college, but one of my favorite college classes was this like world religions class that was actually an anthropology class. And there was this one segment on like being was on being Muslim, but specifically Muslim women.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting because we had several Muslim women in the class.
Right.
And one of the things they said is that, you know, Western culture, women look at Muslim women and they say, oh, they're so oppressed. They're all covered up and they're, you know, completely like they don't have a choice. They have to cover themselves up. And they said, actually, we're free because we don't have to worry if we look good in those jeans. And we have a specific thing that we wear that we're not slaves to fashion and makeup and all of these, you know, doing our hair and all of these particular standards. Now these are, you know, anyway, it was just really eye-opening to me because I thought, you can't possibly choose to do that. And yet they were very free. So I thought that was pretty cool. Just a very different way of looking at it.
Yeah. Well, this is the link I'm going to send you here. And I'm going to just post this one. This is just one of the ones that he does, but you can check out all the rest. He's done a really great thing because he went into East LA.
Oh, yeah, cool.
He went
into
New York. He went into a whole bunch of things there. And he's like, this is not what anybody's ever said about life. And I was totally dismayed that I was believed that you guys were basically pig effers.
and inside. Oh, cool. Well, thank you. Thanks for sending that.
Yeah, he said he goes in a whole bunch of different places there too, all around the country. But I thought that the Amish minister.